Fall is here. That means winter's coming. That means a few more things to think about when we fly. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. Oftentimes, our discussions here on Monday are governed by some things that Bob has brought up in his newsletter, and we want to look at them in more detail. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul. Glad to be here.
We are now into the season where if people haven't looked out the window, they need to look out and notice that it's, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, it's getting dark earlier, it's getting colder. We have already been a month past our first snow at higher elevations here in northern Utah, and it's time maybe to think about some of the things that affect flying in the winter, because whether you own your own plane and fly for business or whether you go out and occasionally rent to stay proficient, you're going to be dealing with a lot of different factors that that change a little bit during this time of year.
Well, cold weather. I mean, it comes just like death and taxes, as they say. We need to remember that our temperature, normal lapse rate temperature, decreases at the rate of 2 degrees per thousand feet. So if we get up on a morning where we get a little dew on the grass or a little frost on the grass, we know we don't have to go up very high before we're going to get sub-freezing temperatures at altitude. And those of us who fly in the clouds, that translates to freezing clouds and icing conditions.
I know this is a topic that pops up a lot in your writings and your discussions, Bob, and that is training to fly in icing conditions. I guess there's no other way to do that than to get up with an instructor, because this is one of those areas where you don't want the first time you encounter it to be when you're by yourself.
Well, it's also an area where the just say no admonishment doesn't work. I find flight instructors will gleefully say, you know, the best prevention or defense against icing is to stay out of sub-freezing clouds. And that's good in theory, but it lacks a lot of credibility in the real world, simply as, particularly around the east and the northern climates of the United States, where from November through April, we're under a shroud of cold sub-freezing clouds. Yet we fly. We have to fly. We continue to fly, not only recreationally, but for business purposes. So the risk of icing, whether in an aircraft certified for flight into known icing conditions, the risk of icing is there. And there's no way around the fact that we must be able to train for that kind of a condition.
Well, and you talk about aircraft that are equipped for flight into known icing. Systems like that can fail, too. I mean, if it's one of the systems that has a weeping wing, a maintenance issue could cause fluid to be unavailable. Electrical issues on some propellers are an issue. You probably need to know how your aircraft will respond if these tools that you have available normally suddenly aren't there.
Well, yes, and it's an interesting paradox, because we have all kinds of weather factors, that thunderstorms, for example, turbulence, for example, icing, for example. There's no prohibition, statutory prohibition, from flying in turbulence, nor is there a statutory prohibition from flying fairly close to or in an area of thunderstorms. But we do have some statutory prohibitions against flying into known icing conditions. And, I can't speak to the politics and how those regulations were promulgated, but nonetheless, those regulations apply. So we have to be able to, as a flight instructing community, we have to be able to prepare our students, and as pilots ourselves, we have to be able to know what the effects of airframe icing are, how to deal with them, how to avoid them, and most importantly, if encountered, how to resolve them.
There are a lot of people, too, Bob, in cold weather who find out for the first time what the primer knob is for. There are any number of other aircraft systems affected by cold weather.
Well, yes, cold starts, engine management, but another one that absolutely must be mentioned is the simple presence of frost on the wing. We have to understand that frost, as fine as medium grit sandpaper, can literally destroy the lifting qualities of the wing and create a disaster at the end of the runway. An airplane with frost on its wing may naturally lift off in ground effect, but once out of ground effect, the lifting qualities could be sufficiently deteriorated that the airplane simply will not climb. So that's another factor. Yet another factor is icy taxiways, icy runways, learning how to maneuver the airplane as if it were a float plane. By that I mean having no braking whatsoever. So that represents a risk. personal injury, just getting into and out of an aircraft on an icy ramp where a slip and fall can create serious injury. Those are factors, too, that we have to pay attention to. Engine care, not to mention the difficulty in starting a super cooled or cold soaked engine, but the damage that we can do in starting an engine that's cold without adequate preheating. That's another factor that has to be considered in cold weather operations.
Well, and I know one thing that always gets me when I try to fly in cold weather, or at least in climates where humidity is also an issue, is you know, sometimes you have to relearn the use of the ventilation system. Also, you know, want to make sure maybe you have a carbon monoxide detector along with you.
Well, yes, and strange that you should mention that. I was the victim just this past week of some carbon monoxide in the cabin of a friend's airplane that I was flying in. Carbon monoxide was getting in through the heating system, and a carbon monoxide detector was going off just at the point where I was feeling queasiness in my stomach. Something was going on. We put the airplane directly back on the ground, solved the problem, and found a leak in the heating system. But that too, as soon as we turn on the heater, just absolutely screams for the presence of an electronic carbon monoxide detector in every equipment, in every aircraft. And I fly in so many different airplanes, I'm now in the process of shopping for a suitable carbon monoxide indicator that I can put in my flight bag, that I can just clip on the strap when I'm in somebody else's airplane that doesn't have this equipment. We'll get an alert. That, too, again, is a very important consideration.
And I've been told that the chemical ones that turn a dot a different color may not be enough. I've been told by a number of people that by the time they change color, it's probably too late for you.
And they're age limited, too. I think they only claim to be valid for 30 or 40 days, something like this. But you can go to Home Depot or online at various sources and find. And again, I'm looking for something that's battery operated, that's very small, that can clip to my flight bag. But they're out there. Digital. I mean, they'll show you in parts per million just how much carbon monoxide is in the air. Very, very reliable.
All right, Bob, I want to talk when we come back about what we can do during days in the winter when we can't fly. We'll do that in a moment. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, and you're listening to the special feature from Aero News.
Do you feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. Bob, we've been talking about flying in cold weather and winter weather. What are some things that we might be able to do on days when we're stuck on the ground or when we just don't have weather conditions that are within our envelope?
Well, lots of things that we can do. The proficient pilot can, one of the things I like to do is just surf the internet, looking for new weather sites, finding meteorological sites that help me to better understand what weather conditions are doing. There's an awful lot of reading that we can do both in print material and in online that will help us stay proficient. Going out to the airport, working on our airplane. We don't have to fly every day that the sun is shining or that the clouds are out. Lots of things that we can do. But, you know, I'm one that is not, as many of my readers know, I'm not terribly sheepish about cold weather flying. As long as we have adequate back doors, we're not doing anything that would be deemed careless or reckless, we're operating within the safe limits of the airplane, don't let cold weather flying be a deterrent. because staying on the ground from November to April in the name of safety can exact a tremendous toll on us safety-wise when we go up in the airplane for the first time 6 months later and find that we have lost a great deal of proficiency.
I was going to say, spending November through April on the ground is a great way to be safe from November through April, but once April dawns, it makes April really dangerous.
that happens. I mean, we know that happens. Pilots are just not terribly proficient. We can go into simulators. We can go to a local flight school that has a simulator, buy some time on that. Heck, we can get Microsoft Flight Simulator, set it up at home, get a joystick or a little yoke and practice instrument procedures. Lots of things that we can do to stay proficient.
Bob, thanks very much for joining us and have a great week. We'll talk to you Monday.
Thanks, Paul. Talk to you next week.
You can read Bob's writings and find out more about his newsletter and his flight school at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.